Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 645. I am Chris, not joined by Tony because he is in the mountains of Vermont, but Earl is here.
Somehow, apparently, vacation is more important than podcasting. I mean, when I'm on vacation, I always podcast.
Jeff, do you podcast on vacation?
No.
No. Earl does, so.
If nothing else, I hold conversations with myself about stuff.
Hey, some people will certainly pay to listen to that, I'm sure. Nobody pays us to talk, but...
I don't know if the market's still there, but I mean, there was a period of time where people were paying people just to like make a little hushing sound to them. So who knows what people will and won't pay for these days.
It's a weird economy where people will pay for the weirdest crap. So, we got a lot to talk about this week. I don't know why it is at the end of August. Not much going on normally yet. Like we got a bunch of stuff that kind of went down today. Starfield reviews dropped. PlayStation announced a price increase on their services. Embracer snuck in that they're closing Volition, who have been developing games for 30 years. There was a Nintendo Direct. Lots of stuff going on. But before we get to any of that, Jeff has fallen in love with classic-styled, a 16-bit classic kind of version RPG. New Sea of Stars. Jeff, are you still in love with it today?
Yeah. I'm about 6 hours in. I am... in some sort of lair, forgot the necromancer's lair, I think. It's a lot of fun. Was not a game that was, I was like super outside of, what's the developer?
Sabotage.
Yeah. Outside of it being them.
The messenger. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the messenger and, you know, because of that, it was on my radar, but it was not, you know...
Completely different type of game.
Yeah, and it's not, like, a game I typically, like, you know, am a huge fan of, but, yeah, they're just a good developer, and they know how to make these retro kind of games, but, you know... I think it's better looking than most Super Nintendo games. You know, like, it looks like a Super Nintendo game, but yeah.
There's a lot of like neat touches, like where you'll be like crawling along the edge. I like that a lot. Like they have these edges that you'll kind of like skirt across, but then there's like this nice like perspective where things are angled and like you're crawling underneath like bridges and stuff, and that just looks really cool.
Yeah, and just, you know, so, again, it's like, it looks like 16-bit graphics, but I think they're pulling off stuff that you would not see on Super Nintendo.
It's very similar in a way to what Square was doing, HD stuff, where it's like, we're doing like classic style, but we're going to like modernize it. And the game looks nice. But I think my favorite part, to Chris's point, is I do like how they modernize Traversu. So many times in RPGs, old school RPGs, you'd have like these weird, like, you can't get here because this thing is slightly higher than your character. But there's a lot of traversal. It reminds me in ways of kind of like 2D Zelda, not necessarily like, but like the fact that like you can hop along chisms and you can jump in the water. And like you can like, you know, like there's no like, you know, like, I can jump up and down. If you're up like four stories, you can jump and there's no fall damage and stuff like that. And I like that they work that into the puzzles and stuff like that. How do you navigate this space? I mean, granted, so far they have not been super complicated, but how do you navigate this space with these abilities and stuff like that?
Yeah. You could climb up and down things. You could jump across stuff.
And they give you, like, and I'm much earlier than you, Jeff. I'm only like 3.5 hours or so in. But like, there's this dungeon after you kind of complete the tutorial area, and you're going through this mine. Basically, you got to solve these puzzles, like Earl said. But then you get this item that enables you to move objects with like the power of wind. So like, then you're solving puzzles out. It's
so you're a golden son.
There's more. Yeah, like, you know, I have not played a ton of these games. You know, I've played, you know, other like turn-based RPGs and stuff before, but like, I feel like there's more puzzles than I, you know.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've played a lot of those types of games. There's normally not this level of interactivity in the environment. Normally you talk to townspeople and you fight monsters. Like there's no like puzzle solving.
Typically not, right? Yeah, like, or very minimal, right?
Yeah,
and there's a decent, you know, there's not like a ton here, and then none of it's like super, you know, complex, at least so far, but it's fun. It makes the levels fun to play. I don't know. It's just like every little touch they put on it, I kind of like. There's no random encounters. The combat system, you know, if you've played Paper Mario, you're going to feel pretty comfortable with pretty quickly. You know, I like that. Which is, you know, the whole, like, use attack, but if you hit attack again right as you're about to attack, you'll do an extra attack, which, you know, just gives that turn-based battle of, I don't know, like an action-y feel, right?
Yeah, I mean, it keeps you engaged with it, right? Because, like, I played through the original Final Fantasy, which isn't a good example, but I was also playing through 5 earlier this year. And you can literally go into battles and just hold the A button. And, like, that can be how you fight. Like, you don't have to engage with anything in there. You don't really have to engage with stuff here. I do think if you don't, like, you will take more damage. You won't do as much damage. And it may be a little bit harder. But it is nice that there is something to do in those battles that, like, you know, it's more interactive than just holding down the A button to attack or cast magic spells.
Yeah, and, you know, there's other things too, like, you know, you have like the sun and moon elements or whatever that you could like collect to increase your attack power, you know, and then the enemies will shield themselves with stuff. I don't know, like, it just all feels really good, and it's not too complex or hard to figure out.
Yes, I also like the paper scissors, not rock paper scissors, what would you call it? Where, like, you do physical attacks to rebuild your magic meter. You also get, like, that, I hate how they phrased it, but the magic without magic, where, like, when you use physical attacks, it also drops.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, like, the elements.
The life mana. And then you can use that to charge up your moves and stuff like that. I like that. I like that those things kind of work in unison. You're building up a combo meter, and then, you know, you have that you have combos with different characters. Right now, we have the three starting characters. I like that they have like really goofy. Like, it's a game that's sincere, but it also like what is it? It's like the war cook or something like that, and like the blade dancer or something like that. I'm like, okay, these are really kind of goofy in hindsight, but you folks are selling this. You are selling, these are your roles. This is what you're going to do.
There is, there was one part, somebody made a joke, like some NPC I was talking to was like, oh, you guys like, so I could do some tropes for you. And like, I forgot exactly how it went, but, you know, just making fun of things that would happen in a video game.
You know, if you've played The Messenger and you talk to the shopkeeper, like, you would get stuff like that too, like where they would just kind of like make fun of video games in general and things that you see over and over again. Lots of nice touches like that.
Another nice thing about the combat is, at least so far, I have not felt the need to grind at all. Usually by the time you reach a fight, you feel pretty prepared for it. And it's cool, because, like, someone gets killed in the midst of a fight, like, they can come back after a couple turns, so it's just, I don't know. There's like a lot of little things that I think make it.
I was also gonna say you can't grind, can you?
Because as far as I know, enemies... so they if you leave an area,
yeah,
like you have to leave it fully and then go back in. There will be the enemies will repopulate.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they typically stay dead. Like, if you're in a dungeon, they're going to stay dead. But I just figured this out earlier tonight because I was doing this Necromancer's Lair. I did the first, you know, encounter in there, and I was like, oh, I want to go, like, go to a campfire and rest up and save. But it was, like, outside of the dungeon. And so, yeah, when I came back in, that first encounter was back. So, yeah, you can. But
you need it. Yeah.
Yeah, no need to.
Which is good. That's nice. Like, because I mean, grinding and like, look, Final Fantasy games, I love them, but you could cut 20 hours off if you didn't need to grind as much as you know is needed in those games. Like, this is just moving you along, and it's like you're encountering something new all the time. You don't feel like I have to go over and over and over the same areas.
It's weird. Like in Elden Ring, I like the grind. In Octopath, it's what made me bored of the game after a while and stop playing. So I don't know. For whatever reason, it works here the way they're doing it. Also, great music.
Oh my god!
I don't think we touched on that yet. Yeah,
I love it. And our buddy Sean mentioned this, like. The Chrono Trigger composer, he did like 3 or 4 tracks for the game. And he seems to be, Yatsunari Matsuda is getting all the credit for this. And it's like, if you listen to it and if you played The Messenger, it is, you can tell that these are the same composers. They're using the same themes, in fact. Like, this is a game that takes place in The Messenger's world, just well in advance of The Messenger. But I was just in this one, it's like right before you get to the mine area, like that dungeon, and the area you're traversing to get to the mine, like the themes are just like with these nice woodwind instruments and so good. But it's like that, it's not chiptune, but it does have like that 16-bit kind of feel to it. It's so good.
Yeah, all around, really enjoying it so far. I'm sorry if I cut you off for a while. Were you going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, because you folks, Chris, had mentioned the grinding and stuff, and literally, I mean, aside from it being on Game Pass, one of the reasons I actually started this game and been playing it is because I looked up how long to be, and they said it's like 25 hours. I'm like, okay, that is a manageable RPG.
Yes.
I don't need some 50, 70, 100-hour adventure where it gets good in, like, the back half of the game. Like, I will say, I did find the opening kind of weird. Like, I mean, I guess it's a trope, but, like, you're thrust into a combat situation. Then it kind of does a prologue for, like, an hour and a half, and then you get back to it, and it's like, that prologue doesn't have a lot of actual combat.
A lot of dialogue.
Yeah. A lot of like, oh, you've been training for years and years. And I'm like, that was cute. But I'm like, and then it's like, at the end of that, it's like, okay, we're going to do a test of combat. I'm like, you didn't teach me anything about the combat yet. How are you testing me on it now? But yes, I mean, to Jeff's point, like, you do pick it up. I mean, again, I think if you speak to them, they will let you know. But like, when you first encounter the combat, you don't know about like timing your attacks and timing your attacks with defense. And then that's the experience you have with combat, like an hour and a half. And then it's like, you go through all of this, you have to sew, and I'm like, okay. And then it's like, yeah, okay. Now here's the tutorial graduation. There's more tutorial but like, that's the point where you graduate from the actual academy. And it's like, you taught me nothing here. I walked around and like, there's a big talk going on, but there's like, you couldn't have like a couple of examples of like, here's some minions for you to fight. And it's, but yeah.
What's funny about that prologue too is like, it, and I'm still not really sure what the main premise of the story is outside of like, you're this warrior and you're going to the eclipse to fight something. I don't really know why they do this. They don't really engage Valerie or. Who's the blade dancer guy?
Zell.
Zell. Yeah, like they don't really tell them why they're doing any of this.
No, and they
time for them to go adventure.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you get like some stuff behind the scenes, like the headmaster and the two older Solstice warriors. Like they're kind of like talking, and so like you know something's up, but like we're not getting that bit of the story here.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, I would say, you know, so far I'm not like amazed by the story or anything, but that should be no surprise coming from me. But yeah, there is stuff, you know, early on that does get set up, like, you know, your friend Garl, who, you know, gets his eye fucking ripped out early on in the game.
I honestly expected him to come back as a villain, so I was a bit surprised when he came back. As like, he's like, yeah, I'm on your team. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like 10 years. Last time he saw you guys, he got his eye wrecked. It's like, oh, no, he's back. And he's just so jolly and chipper.
I mean, great.
Yes, I enjoy him so far. But I honestly expected him to be like the bad guy. It's like you went up to train in like 10 years, he spent getting evil or something like that. But cutting me surprised.
He's just your cook.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, he's just so earnest about everything that, like, he's just fun. Like, he's just like a he's fun gonna character. Get
tortured and killed. I mean, he's already, where I'm at, gone through more shit. And I'm just like, are they just going to torture this character the whole game?
Oh, no. Come on. Like, he's so much fun. Like, when he's meeting the Elder Mist, like, which is kind of like the end of the tutorial, like, he's having a conversation with them. And, like, the Elder
Mist. This is not a conversation.
Such a good line. He's like, oh, sorry. Like, just like he's just so goofy and fun. It's a nice change from, like, you know, all the serious RPG characters that we always get.
Yeah, it's almost like, well, I don't really care about the story, and I couldn't really tell you what exactly is going on. I think it does do you know, good character work early on, get you to like your party.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a really good game. Again, I just gave it a shot because it was on Game Pass and I knew the developer and I was just waiting for Starfield to come out, and here I am pretty engrossed in it. So,
well, it was that, and it got some really good reviews. So I'm like, yeah, check it out. And so far it's been worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Glad you're both enjoying it. I am too. And Jeff, you mentioned Starfield. So we'll jump right into that, because I have played an hour and a half of Starfield now. That is a Bethesda game.
Yeah, so I've heard. Speaking of good reviews.
Yeah, it has gotten good reviews, yes.
Yeah.
But oh, you good reviews, Christopher. Oh, you good reviews.
I don't know, man. I watched GameSpot's review, and I was like, this is pretty negative. Like, they didn't
see that. I mean, the overall, like, average is on OpenCritic is an 88, which is that's pretty high.
Like, they're just like, this game's a mile wide and an inch deep. They were fucking, like, I don't know. I doubt Microsoft is happy with GameSpot and IGN giving it a 7 out of 10. Like, that's just, for that type of game, you want a higher score.
From the two biggest. Which is funny, because
the content of GameSpot's review was even worse than the score. It was just not very impressed.
IGN Spain, IGN Italy, they gave it 100 and a 95.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
it's just so goofy. Like, they had GameSpot down there with a 70. So, and PC Mag also. You know, they kind of had concerns there as well. I will say that it does not have it is maybe the goofiest opening to a Bethesda game that I've ever played. It is not on par with, like, you know, you going through your childhood in Fallout 3 and then leaving the vault. It's not on par with you in the prison wagon in Skyrim or the dungeon escape from Oblivion. You start out as a miner, like you're like on your first or second day on the job, You walk through this mine, you mine some shit with your mining laser. Something goes bad, and then, like, you wake up. And then all of a sudden, like, this weird thing happens, like, where you get attacked, and then it's like, all right, well, here's a ship. Please leave. It's like, what? This is the dumbest setup for the game. I don't know, like, what the actual premise is yet, because I haven't reached Constellation, which is the organization you're going towards. And I think my guess is that after you complete the first big quest, like, you'll find out kind of what the overall premise of the game is. But what a weird thing. But once they gave me the ship, and I was, like, shooting space pirates and then going down to a planet and attacking space pirates in their base, I'm like, yeah, this feels like a Bethesda game. It just, like, looks great. Feels okay.
How's the shooting feel?
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's not amazing.
You said you agree with the reviews.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, but that's kind of what I was expecting, too. Like, Bethesda games are more about, like, exploring the world and engaging with the stories. Like, there's a lot of combat in them, like in Fallout and Skyrim and those, but the combat is, like, secondary. Like, it's all about kind of the adventure and exploring the worlds that are there. We'll see how that plays out in this. But the worlds are very big. I landed on this little moon to fight these pirates, and it's a very big area to explore. But, well, I don't know. Like, I was engrossed playing it outside of, like, the goofy intro. I enjoyed going through the pirate base, and everything looks great. It's very, very good looking. But I haven't unlocked any of, like, the cool stuff that, you know, you saw in all the trailers, like, you know, being able to create your spaceship, and I think there's, like, space magic and shit too. Like, I haven't seen any of that stuff yet, so that game is out there though.
Yeah, soon. Even, like, Fallout 4 I enjoyed, so I'm not, like, super worried about anything here, but it does seem like the people, like, the reviewers who liked it more were people who continued playing after the main story, which, as far as I could tell, like, that's, like, the weakest part of the game, and then, like, the other shit you could do, like, the side quests and stuff, is the better stuff, which is kind of, like,
that's every Bethesda game.
Yeah, exactly. It's, like, not a huge surprise there. So if you just, like, raced through the game, you know, through the main quest for review, I could see probably not liking it. I haven't played it at all yet, but just based on their previous games, yeah, if all you did in Skyrim was play, like, the main quest and that's it, like, you might not see what's so fun about that game, you know?
Which is true, but I mean, that is kind of that is always kind of the curse of being a reviewer, is you get so much time to do it. Because people want these reviews, even though people have already made up their minds one way or another about this game. Why absolutely. we have this discourse about the fact that, I mean, I saw there's an 87 on Metacritic, and people were talking about, like, how that's not good enough. And I'm just like, yes, it wouldn't make it one of the biggest highest reviewed games of the year, but that would still make it a really good game. But the fact that it's only good is a curse. So, gamers are weird, man. Gamers are weird.
Yeah. Everybody's out there just with their Starfield discourse. Like, I think this morning, you know, there was, like, a fever pitch of the Starfield Defense Force and the Sony people that were, like, bitter that they're not getting it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, we've had this conversation on the show before. It is one of Microsoft's big excuses. You know, it's a kind of a showcase of them being like, are you actually a prime time player when it comes to being a studio lead? And that, you know, that's still up for debate. But the fact that like, people are, the way people are reacting about this, and again, because it's the same people who always say reviews don't matter, reviews aren't that important, who are also the ones before they played saying like, okay, this is like, okay, this is no longer a game of the year contender. This, that, and the third, and I'm like, okay, that is a lot to say in just, I don't even know. We're still what, a week or two from a week from the launch?
Yeah, I mean, official launch day is September 6th, so I mean, my guess is it'll be playable on September 5th, like just like it was playable on August 31st, even though early access starts on the first. Yeah.
So. I guess they were just being proactive because it's not like, oh, that time, like, was it Gears or something like that where everybody was New Zealand for like a day because you could change the time zone and just, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it launched at this point about 2.5 hours ago. And it really is only like New Zealand and Japan and like the, you know, Eastern Asia area. They got it September 1st. Everybody else got it August 31st at some point. So.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
That's it for those two big games. But there was a Nintendo Direct, Earl.
Oh, before that, can I talk about my one other game?
Yeah, yeah.
Experience for the week, because you know there's a lot of stuff that came out, a lot of words and stuff that came out this week, but it was also the release of Shredder's Revenge DLC this week, today, Dimensions Shell Shock. So I picked that up on Xbox. It's $8. I mean, you get two new characters, and I will say, huge Ninja Turtles fan, I kind of knew what this was. I'm also kind of disappointed in what it is. It's essentially an arena.
Uh-huh.
Which I guess is, we knew that what it was, but I guess I kind of expected more. It's like a single screen. They'll throw a bunch of enemies at you. There's like some modifiers you can get. Like it might be like, oh, you know, like you fight as Shredder or, you know, like you get like, you'll get unlimited like specials until you get hit or something like that. But for the most part, it's just a single screen encounter. You fight a bunch of enemies, you kill that. You get a choice of something at the end, like a special ability in hell, because you get one life. And then you go into the next room. You have to get these crystals, and after you get a certain number of crystals, you move on to like the next one. So there's like a Mirage one, which is the black and white. From Mirage Comics, there's like the Omni Channel 6, which is the Channel 6 stage, but like there's conveyor belts everywhere. There's like EDO, which is like in Japan and stuff like that. So there's like different environments, but for the most part, it's the same thing. You go, you fight, you know, you fight the foot, you might fight a random boss, something like that. You defeat that and you move on. It doesn't seem to be a ton of variety. You can level up by getting these crystals. It's the same level up as in the game. So it's like, oh, you know, level up this and you'll get the ability to like have two specials or you get additional hit points or, you know, you move fast and stuff like that. But yeah, so far it doesn't seem like to be a ton. I will say the new characters, pretty good. I got to play as Usabi, which is the bunny rabbit.
Yeah,
he's very fast. He combos really well. Can hold. I mean, I think the first stage I played with him, I got like a 110 hit combo right off the bat. He's just that fast with it. I've not played as Karai yet, but she seems to be more kind of strong base. So, but I think they added, which is kind of cool. They added. I don't know if this is just in survival. Or if you can play with them and others, but they added like different skins now. So it's really cool. Like, there's one where, like, you get, like, the turtles in black and white, and, like, but then their face masks are different colors, so you could tell who it is and stuff like that. And, again, homage to the Mirage comics. There's some that you get the old Super Nintendo game and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that's really cool. And for $8, I mean, you know, it's more time with the game I love and an opportunity to kind of go back through the campaign with new characters. But, yeah, it's, I mean, survival mode isn't going to be a game changer. So.
That's a shame. I mean, as you said, you kind of knew what you were getting into, but I was hoping for maybe a little bit more than what it seems like they're offering. I don't know if this is for me. I really enjoyed Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah, but... I think I would be hard pressed for me to recommend this for anybody, because yeah, it's just not. I don't think there's anything here that you just want to, like. You know, if you want to mind your sleep, say around like a couple of times a week or whatever, it's fine. But like, as far as like a fleshy DLC campaign, this is not it.
Got it. Jeff, any interest in returning to Turtles?
No. I did pick up the collection though, and have played a small amount of that.
They're fun games to revisit, but yeah. Yeah. Speaking of beat 'em ups, Earl, you have G.I. Joe Wrath of the Cobra on here. Is that a new game?
Yes, it's like a new game. It was really, it's like one of those random, like, oh, it's like a Steam page appears and there's a trailer attached to it. It's a new game. It's a 2D beat 'em up. And I will just say, personally, I'm excited for the fact that, these people are like 2D beat-em-ups are coming back in fashion. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of G.I. Joe, but it's a fun franchise. I will say the game kind of struggles from the trailer, but I'm still interested in it. They got the person who did the Ninja Turtles score to do a theme song cover for G.I. Joe. And that was interesting. I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but yeah, the opening looks good, and then the gameplay looks like it will need some time in the oven. I don't think it's out until next year, I hope, so we shall see. But yeah, I'm excited for more beat-em-ups. I think it's a genre that is long overdue for a revival. I think
we've been getting some good ones
I think Ninja Turtles is a big part of that. I mean, Scott Pilgrim also helped a few years ago, and Battletoads and Streets of Rage 4. Bring it on. Online co-op, 4 players, let's get that mayhem going.
Something it doesn't have online co-op, from what I understand, though, is Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
I don't understand what online is. But yes, as far as I can tell, it does not have what you would consider traditional 4 players were all playing together at the same time co-op. But it does have some form of online where, like, you can play with the ghost of your friends in real time. So,
and like, how is that any different from just playing co-op? I don't. They're a ghost. So what? Like, I don't know. I watched together. It. You are. You're all playing at the same time in the same. I don't know. That's the thing.
How does it work? Like, I did not watch the trailer. So, like, because when you say ghost, to me that means like I'm not there. Like, I'm not actually. Like, my ghost has come into your world. I'm not playing with you.
No, you...
Maybe you are playing?
You are.
You're playing
with friends.
Yes. So, like, you're playing at the same... Basically, it's like, you're playing your game, I'm playing my game. We're just playing together at the same time. And you can still help each other out. Like, I mean...
What I'm getting to here is, like, how is this substantively different? Like, really? Like... I don't know. I get it. Like, yeah, maybe like the you guys interacting with the enemies might be different because you are in your own games in a way. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, but... I mean, I assume interacting with anything because you aren't interacting with the same stuff. You are.
But you can give each other stuff. You could see each other. Yes. You're both running through the level together. Like, I don't know.
So, like, let me lay this out, right? So put a Mario screen in your head right now. And there's some enemies there. But if I jump on them, I'm jumping on them in my world. But if Jeff jumps on them, there's different enemies in his world.
Yeah.
Or are they the same?
No.
I mean, I'm assuming they're the same enemies running the same patterns.
Enemies, but they're the same enemies, but they're not. So if you jump on them, it doesn't disappear in Jeff's game.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. So it's
yes.
That's very weird.
It is weird. Like, they didn't, and that's only half of it. That's if you're playing with friends. If you turn the online feature on when you're just playing by yourself, you'll see the ghosts of other players. You know, kind of similar to like Dark Souls or something, but you can like trade items with them and shit like that.
And they did I hear they can revive you if you
yes.
die? Yeah. And it is like, it's not, again, it's like them actually playing at the same time. So I guess not entirely like Dark Souls. Like, it's like you're seeing what they're doing, like a whole bunch of other players are doing at the same time.
Huh.
I think it's kind of like,
it's neat.
Interesting. And yeah.
I don't know if it's like, if substantively it gives a lot gameplay wise, but it is kind of neat. Like, if I'm having trouble with this area, maybe I'll just wait here and see how this guy does this jump.
Yeah. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, I guess because no matter what, or I guess if they were, I don't know how that works. You can put up what they call standees, which are like things you can put like in some of these games to help them revive, because you can't, you know, like. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if you could do that, where it's like, oh, you put it on the other side of the jump, like if somebody dies, they can field up to the other side and just get past that jump.
But that would be neat.
Yes, I don't. But I mean, again, we shall see. But like, they were just like, they're like, Yoko co-op, and I'm like, yeah, and then like, oh, and I'm playing, like, oh my gosh, and then like, this weird thing where like, you're ghost, and like, you can race each other. The racing stuff is actually kind of crazy.
That is neat. Like, so like, the three of us could get into a game together, and like, we're not interacting with each other's world, so we're all taking a different run, and just to see who gets there quickest. That would be neat.
Yes, it kind of reminds me, in some ways, of Mario 35. I mean, I assume that's sticking your friends over, but it's the same thing, right? Because it's not always about like who gets to the end first. I think some it's like who gets the one to seed fastest, and some's like who defeats the boss quickest and stuff like that. So yes, I mean, it is nice. It is robust. It is still just, you know, I just wanted pure online, especially being that like, I know a lot of people hated it. I didn't mind it because I thought it was fun. They got rid of collision detection, so you don't run into your friends anymore or your partners.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too because it was like a way to just kind of be a dick. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And you're with people in the same room, so it's like you can be serious when you want to be serious to advance in the level, or like, I'm just messing around and I'm gonna jump on your head now and push you into a hole.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly how I played. Like, again, being in the game, I could do like, but having fun and dicking people over is a different sensation. But yeah, so the online offline was one aspect of it. One aspect we knew about, but I think they expanded on, which is really one. All the characters stay exactly the same. Well, no, that's not true. There are two types of characters. There are what I would consider normal characters, which is Mario, Luigi, Peach, Daisy, and two random Toads. Who at some point I think they need to give a name. Oh, and Toadette. And then there's four Yoshis and Nabbit. Those characters are the ones that can't... what am I trying to say? They're the ones who can't... I mean, they can die if they jump into a hole or off, but they don't take damage and stuff like that. So you get that going where... It's like the children's character, essentially, or like the easy mode. The fun thing, I wish there was like one normal Yoshi could be, because like Yoshi is Yoshi in the game, so he has to shredder jump, or they have to shredder jump. But also, characters can ride Yoshi and shoot in Yoshi. It would be a very fun and interesting way if there was like a normal Yoshi that other people can jump on and like trade to like, get across gaps and stuff. So yeah. And then they showed off the power ups. You saw the elephant, which is the big reveal from the initial trailer. The elephant, he can charge, he can run over huge gaps, he can hit enemies with his trunk, and he can. Hold water in his nose. And the water can be used to, you know, attack enemies, but also like water flowers and stuff like that. There's a bubble power up, which was interesting. You create bubbles which can bubble up enemies and turn them into coins and defeat them, go through walls. It seems like the biggest use of them is like you can jump off of them, they will pop, but like you can like create two or three of them and then kind of create your own floating platforms and jump across that to get to higher places or far away places and stuff like that. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen with that, with like speedrunners and stuff like that. And then the final one was Drill Mario, or a drill power-up, where you wear a drill on your head, which you can use to you can butt stomp with it, which will like, you know, break certain structures. It allows you to burrow on the ground, and it allows you to burrow up into the ceiling and stuff like that to get power-ups or to hide from enemies and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, that's fun. They showed the star and the fire flower, traditional Mario power-ups. And then, you know, the big hook of this game, the big selling point, of course, is the wonder aspect, the wonder seeds. And that is, you know, it seems like each level might have its own unique gimmick. So they showed off ones where, oh, one that was really cool is like it turns into like a weird like isometric view, but not necessarily isometric, because isometric is like tends to be top down. This is more like side, like vertical. It's like you're going, you're walking on the stages and stuff like that. There was one where like you turn into like a giant balloon Mario and you're trying to navigate the spaces without hitting enemies. There's one where it's just a ton of bubbles and you're bouncing up on them. You know, we've seen the ones where, like enemies, like the ramps that run through the stage and move the goalposts. There's ones where you turn into Goombas and like the Goombas do like stealth missions. They have to hide from enemies because they don't really jump and they run really slow. So again, it seems like there's going to be a ton of varieties with that, and they seem like a ton of fun. So I'm go on.
No, I do. I'm kind of on the fence about this game, but I just think that like 2D Mario is just kind of stale. But watching this, when they got to this part, I was like, oh, that's neat. Like, you know, like you find these wonder flowers, and the level just goes crazy. I do wonder if it's like a scripted thing though in the level, or if like different things could happen anytime you grab the flower. I'm guessing probably scripted.
I think that's going to be the big, but I guess in their head, the variety comes from the, cause then they also introduced badges, which is, like modifiers. So There are badges that makes it easier. So you can get like a wall jump, which I thought Mario already had. You get a dolphin kick, which makes it easier for you to like break blocks and move faster underwater.
There's like high a jump.
High jump.
Grappling.
The grapple vine. Then there's some that are just like you can turn invisible, which is like, oh, that's awesome. Except you can't see the character either. So it's like more like kind of having a sense of like where your character is on screen. And trying to navigate that space, which seems like it's a harder challenge. So I assume there will be a mixture. Then there's the I forget what it's called, but it's like Mario Run, where it's like it's on Mario constantly runs. So that's another one where it's like, oh, that could be both good or bad, depending on the stage, where it's like, oh, this is an endless runner. So like, yeah, and you can equip one at a time, and you can equip a different one for each level. So I assume they expect the variety to come from that, the variety to come from like, you know, like the wonder seeds and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it looks a ton of fun. It looks great. I'm excited for it. I didn't need to see more. I already pre-ordered it, so.
I mean, it's clear even from the first trailer that even Nintendo realized that like 2D Mario needed a refresh. And well, I mean, you could see that they're trying to do that here. Like,
yeah, and I think that, I mean, that's been
art style, everything.
Like, I mean, when you think about the fact that the last actual 2D Mario game is over a decade ago, like, yeah, they weren't like just gonna like, we're not gonna do New Super Mario Brothers 5.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks, you know, I don't know. I'm sure it'll be good. It seems like, you know, I think journalists got to play it as well. They played like an hour of it, and you know, it seems really positive. I don't, Chris, I can't believe you didn't watch this thing.
I was in a call when it happened, like a work call, so I did not end up in it. Didn't go back and watch the redo of it, but yeah, I mean, I saw somebody else post this earlier today. They were like, they watched like the first like minute of the direct and were like, I'm getting this anyway, so don't really want to spoil it for me. So it's like, I'm gonna play this regardless. So like, it's not selling me on it one way or the other.
Yeah, it's just like gonna. The one thing I will note, and then we can move on, is I also like that the enemy of this game is Bowser, but apparently Bowser's now a castle.
Oh, okay. I'm
not sure how that worked, but like, yeah, I thought he had merged with it. And like, no, Bowser's now the castle, or like the floating airship fortress castle. Like, oh, okay, good for you, Bowser. Good for you.
He's transformed from a dragon turtle thing to a castle, flying castle at that. That's weird. All right, well, I am excited for that. That is a busy day for games because that is also Spider-Man 2 hitting on the PlayStation 5. Yeah, so.
A wild day.
That's also Sonic Stars, right?
Is it really? That fucking sucks, man.
Or a Sonic Superstars before that.
Sonic Superstars is the 17th, so not much.
Basically.
It's like 3 days apart, right?
Yeah. Three days. Alan Wake 2 was also supposed to be the 17th. They moved out to the 27th, so they gave themselves a week, at least. October is an insane month for games, so
it's already a year off. This insane year. I have not been left wanting for games much at all this year. I'm always have something to play. So, but yeah, yes. It's just like, dude, why is Spider-Man and Mario the same day? Come on, man. I mean, it's cool, I guess. I want to play Sonic too. Although I think Sonic might be $60, which feels a bit much, but I don't know.
I can tell you in a second.
What's up, Doc?
Or I can't. Evidently, it's not loading to tell me.
I'm pretty sure it's $60.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Sonic Superstars. I think it's $60. Yeah, $60. Oh, you saw it was on the Switch. I don't know if it's like different on the PlayStation and Xbox.
Fucking $70 for a fucking Sonic 2D game.
Yeah, that's a little bit crazy. So, digital standard is $59.99.
There you go. Hold your money.
Yeah, that's a little bit much for that, especially, I mean, as I said, like, it's just a really packed month.
Yeah. If I get it, for sure, I love Sonic, but, like, if I can wait, these Sonic games do go on deep discount all the time, so there's that.
Yeah, and you're not going to be wanting for games to play the rest of the year. So maybe that's like an early next year game.
Maybe. I want to play it, though.
All right.
Boy, oh boy.
Let's see. PlayStation Plus increased their prices. And it's not a small increase either.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I thought it was $60. When you mentioned it was still 50 or something like that. Or I don't know. It went up like 20%.
Yes. Like incredibly high here. So let's see. They just put it up on their site. PlayStation Plus Essential moves to $79.99. So $20 there. PlayStation Plus Extra, which is their mid-tier, it goes from 100 to 135. And PlayStation Plus Premium goes from 120 to 160 for the year. Yeah. I just don't know like what value there, like I don't know if the value is there for $160 for their PlayStation Plus Premium subscription. Like you do get the PlayStation original, like the old games. You get those updated with trophies. You get the streaming, the PlayStation 3 stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah. I guess if all I had was PlayStation 5, I just would accept it, but yeah. I have other systems, and if you look at the price points of the others, like what you get for the price is like better on both. Like I don't know,
because like at $160, like I'm expecting your day one releases, right? Like
yeah,
like it's not that far off from what you're probably paying for Game Pass, but Game Pass you're getting anything Microsoft for, like Starfield just came out. Like,
yeah, I'm getting that for free. So
yeah. As opposed to like, I pay $160 and I still have to pay $70 to get Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. I was gonna say it's also doubly so when we think about the announcement from last week, where it's like, oh, you don't even get, you know, like this isn't even you can use for like PlayStation, what is it called, Portal?
Yeah. Right, because you need to have the stuff installed on your PlayStation 5 to use PlayStation Portal. So,
yeah. So it's like one of those where I'm like, oh, okay, I do not get... Like, this just seems like you are ahead, and you're like, nobody's going to stop us.
Yeah, and what a great time. Like, if they had been like, all right, we're going to raise PlayStation Plus to $160 for the year. But PlayStation Portal is like your new $100 entry point into PlayStation. So you get that, you get the PlayStation Portal, and you get PlayStation Plus because you could stream everything. That would make sense, but you can't stream stuff to it, so it all seems very expensive. Anyway, last bit of news here, and maybe we do have more, I'm not sure, but the last bit they're all wrote down. Volition is being closed by Embracer Group, effective immediately. Embracer bought Volition a few years ago. They are the makers of Saints Row and Red Faction.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, honestly, it's just a shame. Like, I mean, I think we've seen this several times now with Embracer. Embracer just, they've gobbled up and grew, but they weren't growing. They were just gobbling up. And it seems like their bubble's not bursting. I think partially because they were expecting a big deal to go through that faltered at the end. And now that's just kind of creating a ripple effect. And it just kind of also shows why, consolidation is terrible for the industry, any industry, really.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if Volition would have survived anyway, But
yeah,
we know that Embracer, who bought them for like pennies on the dollar, and is now suffering financial issues because money is much harder to come by now. And they borrowed a lot of money when it was easy to get, and now they don't have that capital to pay it back. So they're cutting some stuff to save themselves some operating cash, and Volition's on that chopping block. Also, the Volition, their last two games were not.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, but it's also one of those things where it's like was it their fault or was it like rushed out so they could? Because I mean, I think Saints Row is going. Just to kind of throw salt in the wound, I mean, Saints Row is a PlayStation Plus title next month or starting tomorrow.
Starting September. Yep. Yeah, that is shitty.
Did you buy that game, Chris?
I do. I have it. It is fine. I can see where people were like, "Oh, this is not." Especially at launch, it was not solid. It was very buggy. They have fixed it over the past year, which makes this even more kind of, makes it a little bit more sad because they have fixed Saints Row, the new one, to a point where I think it is probably a solid game. And they have some DLC that either just came out or is going to be coming out real soon. They've made that into a decent game. They've supported it well, and now their reward for that is you don't exist anymore. But before that, they did Agents of Mayhem, which was 2017, and that was not adored by people either. So. It has been a decade since their last like critically acclaimed game, and that was Saints Row 4.
Yeah, but I mean, we've seen it time. You don't necessarily need to have a critically acclaimed game if the commercially acclaimed.
That was their last commercially successful game too.
Yeah, I was about to say they evolved. That's the other side. They've not. Like, I mean, even Saints Row, I think, ran its course. Huge advocate. I think Saints Row 3, the third, is one of my favorite open world games. It was one of my game of the years when it came out. Saints Row 4 does not live up to that. And I really feel like they've never really been able to recapture that. Because I think it's just like the right. It's kind of like Fast Five, where it's just like the right amount of like, we're still kind of sincere and grounded, but we're also going to do something nonsensical and over the top. And it's like that balance between like, oh no, you went completely through the other side of the Rubicon, and now you're just completely nonsensical and over the top.
Yep. Saints Row 4 was like 6 and 7, still good, Fast and Furious movies, but lesser maybe. Agents of Mayhem and Saints Row
were Fast 9,
8, 9, and 10. Yeah.
I don't mind 8. But 9, yeah. But yes.
Space.
But yeah, I mean, Fast and Furious aside, it does really suck that, again, one of these, because I mean, especially for them, because they were originally on the THQ.
Yep.
So they've gone through the song and dance with several big publishers, and to kind of end up just on the cutting block, just like that, it's awful.
Yeah, multiple times now where it's like, is Volition gonna, are they gonna survive? And well, we now know the answer is no. But yeah, they were, when THQ went under, they were picked up by Deep Silver, and Deep Silver was gobbled up by Embracer, and now they are done. And likely the Saints Row series, although maybe that's a way for Embracer to make some money, as they sell off the IP. So Volition had some good stuff, like they, previous years ago, their first games were Descent, which are space combat games. They were pretty good. They did the Summoner games on PlayStation 2. They did the two Red Faction. Well, they did all the Red Faction games. That's their series as well. So, I mean, they have some IP that is valuable. So maybe that's a way for Embracer to make some money. Maybe they sell off that IP to EA or somebody else looking to compete against a GTA, because you don't have anything like that out there now that Saints Row is dead.
Yeah. Damn shame. Especially in an industry that, like, we have embraced open world games more and more. I mean, we just talked about Starfield, you know, Assassin's Kingdom will be a contender for Game of the Year. We still, you know, so it's, I mean, weird.
Hell, Diablo is even Diablo is now an open world game.
Yeah, it does suck that we don't have, like, that counterculture game that's, like, poking fun of, like, because again, as it continues, the more and more there's more to make fun of. There's more to kind of lampoon or satirize and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I don't know if we've had this discussion before, but the video game industry is in many ways humorous. And I don't mean that, like, you know, it's not like people don't, but, like, they don't, the gaming industry doesn't really poke fun of itself that often. We've had this discussion around, like, the difference between, like, the state of play and I forget what Microsoft does and Nintendo Direct. Nintendo's always had no issues poking fun of themselves, but, like, everybody else is very, like, buttoned up and, like, we have to be very serious people, and that's not what Saints Row was. Saints Row was very much keen to make fun of, you know, the industry, but also, like, a sense of humor that's different from GTA. GTA is more parody than it is satire, and again, very thin line between those two, but GTA doesn't have that sense of humor that Saints Row exhibited.
Right. We did get a question in.
Well, just one thing I want to touch on, and I could be wrong. We didn't know the date of the PlayStation Portal last week, did we? PlayStation Portal, wow.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Did they give a date?
Yes, because it's November 15th. So I feel like last week, I feel like we would have mentioned that. I don't think we knew that.
Yeah, that sounds like new information.
Yeah, so it's out on November 15th, which again isn't anything. It's just a date. It's weird, though, because you would think they would align it before Spider-Man. I guess, again, if you sync it up with, like, the holidays, it's like right before, like, Black Friday and the holiday shopping season. So you want that in there, you want it on the advertisements, but I don't know. I think hardware should usually be tied to games but yeah.
I don't disagree, but also you need a PlayStation 5 to play Spider-Man regardless. So, like,
yeah.
The PlayStation Portal makes zero sense, so. We did talk about that last week, how it's
a very weird device.
Very specific use case, like, very, very specific use cases for it, I guess. They made the Wii U, but nicer, I guess. I don't know.
It's a better overall package, but I wouldn't say nicer, because the Wii U was one thing. Like,
yes, you bought the Wii U, you got the entire package.
Yeah,
you didn't have to buy the $300. What the Portal is $200. You didn't have to buy a $200 tablet. Utilize the Wii U.
$200 would have gotten, like, $50 more would have gotten you the whole Wii U.
Yeah. And the Wii U tablet, surprisingly durable. That PlayStation Portal does not look as durable. Nope. We do have a question here. Can devs afford to release games in unpolished states anymore? The margin for success and failure seems closer than ever. And this was in relation to what we were just talking about with Volition. But what do you guys think?
I think it depends on what you consider that unpolished state. I think that Bethesda and Rockstar, I think, are two examples of people who have made polished games that have bugs and glitches and stuff like that, that people embrace because the core mechanics are really good. I think if you don't necessarily have that trust with an audience, it's harder to overcome. Like, I mean, it wasn't buggy as far as I remember. It's feature is, but like, I've heard No Man's Sky has done a terrific 180 on what it was at launch, but I don't know if there are people who are giving it a second chance since then. I don't know if there are going to be people who give it a second chance because of that level of investment when it was originally released and just not turning out to be what people wanted. That you do get to that. It's cliche, but you get one chance to make a first impression.
Yeah, you can look at Saints Row, right? Like, that game is now in a very good state. I think it is fun. It is playable. It works very well, and it is probably the game that should have come out last August. But you're year on. Who's going back to Saints Row in 2023 when we have so many good games coming this year that, like, you're not going to spend your time going back to a game from last year that was critically panned?
Yes, and that's also another good point. It's like, you have to thread the needle of, like, if Saints Row was, I don't know, like an RPG, maybe, because it's not necessary, it's not as crowded of a field. An open world game, like we said, is like not a dime a dozen, but you'll find a better one. You've either had a better one, like last year would have been something like Elden Ring came out then, or you'll run across one later on that is just as good. Again, like you look at this year, we've had, you know, Tears of the Kingdom, like I said, Starfield, Baldur's Gate, were just some of those bigger kind of open world meaty games. The Harry Potter game was open world. That was this year, right?
Yep. It was this year. Seems so long ago.
It does. It's like one of those things. That's a whole aside. Like, it seems like one of those things because, I mean, I've seen the MPDs. It sells well. It's one of the best-selling games of the year. But I feel like the controversy around this release was the only thing interesting of note for that game. Because everything else, like, people were like, oh, this is better than I thought when it came out for, like, the first week. And then it just, like, vanished from any discourse in either direction.
I mean, Jeff enjoyed it, yes.
Which game?
Exactly. the Harry Potter game.
That game was really good. I think it vanished from the discourse because everyone's afraid to talk about it.
But also everything else, like since then, like, we've gotten a ton of other good games that, like, stuff does just kind of get pushed back. It wasn't able to sustain itself. But I feel that with a lot of these games, though, it's very hard for them to sustain discourse over a longer period of time, because in 2 weeks there's going to be another massive game coming out.
Yeah, and I think that's been the bigger issue for a lot of these games. It's like, you have that first opportunity, but you stumble, there's usually something right around the corner that's going to eat your lunch. I think a prime example of this, Callisto Protocol, came out last year, was decently received, not, you know, like, it had its flaws, but Dead Space was weeks after that. You fumbled. People are like, I know Dead Space. I know how Dead Space functions. I'm just going to Dead Space. You are not going to get a second chance to do that.
And you see now that studio is struggling a little bit. They had to make some cuts recently as well. So
yeah. Another good example, I think this kind of goes to more of a, like, if there's like a standard bearer, you have to be better than a standard bearer. But like the hype and anticipation around Nickelodeon's All-Star Brawl or whatever it was called, and like people big that up because like everybody wants an alternative to Smash Brothers. Don't know why, but everybody wants an alternative to Smash Brothers, and that game comes out. And like simple stuff like, oh, these characters aren't voiced, so it's very weird to have them be quiet, kind of doomed it. There's a sequel coming out this year, and I feel like there's no anticipation around it like there was for the original game.
No, honestly, you mentioned it probably a month or so ago, and I completely
forgot it was coming. Yeah. Where, like, the first game was like, oh man, who's going to be in it? And it's like, it did not have a great first impression, but it had so much. And it's like, okay, you have a standard barrier. Like, you have to be better than Smash Brothers to get anywhere. And you did not even hit the base level. So you got your one chance for moving on. And to its credit, I think Multiversal got some of that right. And then Multiverses did that weird, like, oh, that was just like a very long beta. So we'll. And I think that's going to bite them in the ass when they decide, like, oh yeah, we're actually going to actually quote-unquote release this game now. People have moved on. People don't care anymore.
In terms of a studio, failing, though, I don't know if it's necessarily the game being unpolished. It's more, how is that studio doing financially? And how are they utilizing their budget, and how are they funding their games and the studio itself? Because you can have a game that stumbles out of the gate or isn't polished in certain terms, and survive, but smaller studios, the margin is certainly going to be smaller. Like somebody like Bethesda, like, you know, they launched what, Fallout 76. Nobody liked that game, but Bethesda is so big that they can weather that. But somebody like Volition, not big.
Well, again, it kind of goes back to a different beast altogether, in that you really should not put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And I know it's harder and harder to say that because budgets and expectations keep on ballooning up and up. But like, you know, like you said, like Bethesda was able to sustain themselves. Like, and Fallout 76 was the, you know, greatest thing in the world. But like, I mean, re-releasing Skyrim every few years gave them money. Yes. Fallout 76 actually does have a decent a dedicated audience.
Yeah, it is turned around as well in terms of quality, but they have the, you know, I mean, they have Microsoft money now, but before that they were owned by ZeniMax. They had money that they could invest into making it right.
I mean, a great example of it, we talked about it earlier today. Super Mario Brothers Wonder. There, you know, people had hands-on impression. There was interviews with people from Nintendo where Nintendo was like, we're not going to give you a deadline. We're not going to, like, okay, this game has to be out in 2 years. Like, you do whatever you make this game. And very few studios have that opportunity to be like, you have no timetable, money's not, because Nintendo has enough, like, proper stuff they can shout wherever, where they don't necessarily need to, like, okay, Mario has to hit. I mean, Tears of the Kingdom, I think, I don't know the exact quote, but I think part of it they said is like, yeah, we spent a year polishing the game after we finished it. Many studios, most games are done like the month before, if that, because we have a ton of day one patches. Like, people are working up to the week of the game's release to make sure it's in a functional state, where Nintendo's like, yeah, take a year, figure it out, you know, like, make sure everything works, make sure nothing's broken too much. You don't have that opportunity because a lot of people have like that one or two games, and if it's not on cycle, then you're out.
Yep.
One of my favorite and most heartbreaking things to watch on YouTube is, I don't know if you folks watch it, is what happened with Matt McMuscles. And a lot of the times, like it talks about that stuff where, one, either people don't have a clear idea what the game wants to be at the start of the game development, so you spend so much of the time that you could have used to, like, you know, actually polish that idea into, like, figuring out what the game is, or, like, it's getting too close to, like, over budget, so you have to start cutting features and levels and characters and stuff like that. And, like, again, it's a creative art. It's a creative medium. It's not a science. There's no one way to make a game. It's just that a lot of times it feels like, it's a creative art meets a capitalist industry, and it's like, okay, we need this out for Christmas season. You got what you got. Maybe if it does well, we'll give you time to fix it. Maybe you don't, or maybe there's enough goodwill. Like Cyberpunk, I think, has had time to recover, and I think people are excited for that DLC this year.
Yes, but CD Projekt Red, you know, a studio, they're a publisher in their own right, but, you know, they have the funds that they could sit back, correct what was wrong with that game, and they're a studio and publisher with a big enough spread that they are able to, hey, come back and try it. We fixed it. Like, people will listen to you because, one, they've done this multiple times now, because The Witcher 3 also launched janky, not as janky as Cyberpunk, but.
And I think, again, and I know it's going back to, so I mean, I guess the long and short of it is, like, if you have trust, if you have built up, years and years of trust with your consumer base, you can launch a buggy game because the expectation is that you will do something to remedy it. If you don't have that, or if you have a reputation, I mean, we know, you mentioned Nintendo, we've mentioned Mario, we've mentioned Zelda. Flip side of that, nobody expected Scarlet and Violet to get patched. They were just like, we spent $60 on this buggy ass game. This is the game we're going to get. People are going to say they're not going to trust them as much the next time, but I mean, we've seen Pokemon. People have said they've given up on Pokemon for every generation, but like, that's one of those where it's like, okay, you kind of know what you're getting. And like, yeah, expect better from the Pokemon company, hold them to task, hold them to, but I guess other ones, it's like, okay, something's wrong. We're going to see a fix. We're going to see a change, hopefully. And yeah. I don't know where Volition falls, because I feel like that they were people that I would have trusted to fix the game. And to your point, you said they have. Yeah. But I think Saints Row was just a weird product at the time, because it was the back to basics, and I think the franchise had evolved. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's, where do you go? Like, they probably did the best thing they could with Saints Row 4, a game I actually really like, but at some point it stops being Saints Row and it's something completely different. And then this new Saints Row comes along and it is more of a back to basics, but it doesn't hit what people want out of Saints Row, which was the personality and the characters. And, you know, they tried, it didn't work, and sadly they are gone. So
yeah, it's a damn shame.
Real quick before we wrap, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about games, but I finished Resident Evil 4 finally.
I forgot that it came out this year.
Yep, that's another one.
Our end of the year recap is gonna be so fascinating. Like, oh right, that
also came out this year.
I will say, I remember it came out this year, but like, I was talking to somebody the other day, and it's like, it felt like Tears of the Kingdom was years ago at this point.
It really does.
Yeah, it's just like, the first half of the year, I mean, one, it's, as of this recording, it's August 31st. We are, what is it, two-thirds through the year?
Yeah. Eight months.
Yeah. And it's just insane to think about the fact that, like, this year has just kind of flown by. And I think part of it's like pandemic brain. I think we spent so many, like, 2 or 3 years in the pandemic that, like, It's just, I feel like just being open and out, like the year has just kind of zoomed. But yes, sorry, you, Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, so I finished that. It took me way longer than I probably should have. I think the final time on the save was 18 hours. That game's long.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's always been long. I don't think, like, Resident Evil 4, the original, was the longest Resident Evil at that point. I think that's, I don't know. I think it may go on a little bit too long. I really dislike the last four chapters of that game. Basically from the Ramon Salazar fight, which is annoying, through the final four chapters, which is, there's three boss fights in between. It's Ramon Salazar, and then you fight Krauser, and then you finish it with Sadler. And they, I think they may get progressively more annoying as time goes on. I was getting really frustrated with Salazar, and then I was getting really frustrated with Sadler. So like anger inducing.
Yeah, you're bringing it back for me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed like exploring, the areas, but those areas in the back four, are less engaging. Like it's a industrial area that you're exploring. It's not the castle. You're out of the castle by after you beat Salazar. You're out of the village at that point. Like you're just in generic factory setting, and it's not as cool like to explore. And they introduce these regenerators, which you have to kill the parasites in them to kill. Otherwise they just keep getting up and they're fucking annoying. Everything in the back third of that game I found annoying. So I think it's a great remake of a game that I never loved because of that back third. And this just, it does it very well. I think it is the definitive version of Resident Evil 4, but I would rather play 2, 3, 1, basically any of them except 6 before this one. So,
wow.
But it is an excellent remake. Like, if you like Resident Evil 4, there's zero reason for you not to play this, because it is.
I can't argue with you about all the annoying things, though. I remember those regenerators annoying me. I remember some of those boss fights annoying me. But I just think the game as a whole is so good that, like, it's just, I just take that with it.
I wish the Salazar fight was like it. It's like you could just be like, all right, like it's a final boss, it's annoying. He's annoying, but like that, I would have been like, all right. But instead, they're like, we're going to put you in a knife fight with Krauser.
Yeah, I hate that shit.
And then the Sadler fight is insane, too. It's like he's this big, giant monster. They have to shoot the eyeballs, but he's always at an angle where it's hard to get the eyeballs. And yeah. Anyway, finish that. I probably will not touch it for quite some time. So,
good job though, you did it.
Yeah, that one's finally done. But out of the remakes, I would say Resident Evil 2 is maybe the best one. I mean, that's still probably the best. Resident Evil 2 is maybe the best Resident Evil. So
yeah, I'm kind of with you.
That's it. Next week we will have Starfield. I assume, Jeff, you will be playing it.
I will
be playing it. Earl, I know it's not really your jam, but do you think you'll poke at Starfield?
I might poke at it. Again, it's just more of a curiosity, just to be on the ball for what is not normally a contender, because he'll get an 87 on Metacritic. So. I don't know if I want to sell you myself an 87, to be honest, now that I think about it.
That is fair. I mean, I don't want you to stoop so low.
Yeah.
We're probably going to continue playing Sea of Stars, I assume, as well. So we'll have more of that
Yeah, I might not start Starfield if I'm not done with Sea of Stars. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, that... I could see if you're like, I'm just going to get lost in Starfield and don't want to not know what's going on in Sea of Stars.
Yeah, I don't really want to bounce between two RPGs. I don't know.
I think they're different enough for me that I'm going to be able to do it, but I could definitely see where you're like, I don't want to invest. Like, these are two big chunky games. I don't want to invest time and lose focus on one. So,
well, luckily, you know, Sea of Stars, from, you know, what it sounds like, it's not that big. It's, you know, it's manageable. Yeah, I could be done with it.
You or nearing completion when Starfield officially launches. So, all right. Well, we'll be back then. Starfield, Sea of Stars. I still want to try out Texas Chainsaw. I think Tony will be back, so maybe I'll send you guys a text, see if you want to get on and run around as a Leatherface or not. So we'll see. Jeff, say goodnight.
Goodnight.